Zakaria, and with Dr. Pikul, you know, under his supervision, I worked on developing this technology that allows the healing of metals using electrochemistry. And a lot of the inspiration from this comes from bones. You know, our bones are made from this porous structure that's surrounded by, you know, a more rigid, you know, structure. And within that porous structure, you have cells and blood vessels and all these phenomena that, you know, basically power life and allow our bones to regenerate after fracture, allow our bones to grow, and so on. And so the interesting thing about bone that we took as an inspiration, really, is the fact that bone can transport nutrients and can transport cells through its pores. And we took that, you know, through a, it's called a biomimicry process, and transported it to metals. So metals are very interesting because they're rigid, they have high thermal conductivities, high electrical conductivities, and they're very ubiquitous in structures that we use every day. And so allowing metals to have this adaptive property and this ability to heal in the same way as bone will really open up a lot of possibilities for human-made structures and human-made technologies. And so we start out with a foam, as you can see over here. So we mimic that porous structure of bone. And we also use electrochemistry. And what electrochemistry allows us is to transport electrons through the metal matrix or the metal structure and transport ions through the pores of the metals. And this combination or this combined transport allows the deposition of metals and the healing to happen. And I will explain more in detail as I go into this talk. One interesting thing and one interesting component of this healing process is an insulating coating that we use on the metal surface. So we use this polymer called Perylene D, which is electrically insulating and has excellent chemical stability and is deposited with a vapor-based process, and so it's really conformal over this random structured foam. And Perylene D really allows us to enable this healing process. So how does it work? So we take this nickel foam, we coat it with Perylene D, right? And, you know, all of it, as you might think, it's a random foam and all the members of it are coated with this polymer, right? Then we subject it to some tensile testing, for example, or any sort of fracture that you might think of, and it cracks, right? And when it cracks, only the cracked area, the metal is only exposed at the crack area, but everywhere else, the metal is still covered with that insulating polymer, right? And so when I put the cracked metal sample in the electrolyte, and I put a nickel plate, I set a nickel plate as an anode, and the metal sample is my cathode, and then I pass a current between them, I can plate metal only in the area where the metal is exposed and nowhere else. And you can see here, and these are some scanning electron microscopy images that we took, and these are just false colored to make them clear. So you can see in the fractured image, you can see that the blue areas are where the metal is exposed, and the insulating coating is still intact. The brown, those are the brown areas. After we heal it, the new nickel that is deposited, which is shown in green, only grows on the areas where the nickel is exposed, right? And the brown areas is still pristine, right? The brown areas where the insulating coating was still undamaged don't get any nickel coating on them. And this is the, you know, the reaction that powers all of this. So, you know, your electrons come to the surface on the exposed nickel, they combine with the nickel ions in the electrolyte, and form nickel atoms that accumulate on the surface. So again, the polymer coating really is a major part of this healing process. Without the polymer coating, you would just plate nickel or deposit nickel everywhere, and it will be really a huge waste of energy, and you will not, you probably will not heal that crack area as effectively as you would if, as in this case, when the nickel deposition is focused in that crack area. So going into a little bit of detail, and this is something that you can see in a paper that we published recently. So we damaged this nickel foam in three ways. So first with plastic deformation, so we strained it until 3%, so until the members of the nickel foam were plastically deformed, meaning that they were deformed beyond the point where they can recover their initial length. We also damaged nickel foam by tensile fractures, so you just stretch it until it fractures completely, and scission failure, so we basically made a 4-millimeter cut with scissors in these nickel foam. So looking at the scission failure, you can see it up there where we have a scan electron microscopy image where you can see that the nickel is fractured. After healing, you can see that the nickel is deposited everywhere. The interesting aspect is that if you zoom out a little bit in the electron microscope, you can see that the area close to the scission is the only area that receives significant nickel deposition. Once you get about 1 to 3 millimeters away from the scission, you cannot see any of these, you know, blobs of new nickel forming. And we did also a little bit of mechanical testing. So we tested these, you know, before and after the healing. And these are stress strain plots for after the healing. You can see that as we increase the energy, so from 0 joules, so not healed at all, 500 joules, 900 joules, 1500 joules, we can see that the strength and the toughness of these samples improves significantly. And to quantify that, we used this quantity called healing efficiency, so the strength healing efficiency, to compare the strength in the pristine state and the strength in the healed state, and the toughness healing efficiency to compare the toughness in the healed state and in the pristine state. And we can see that both measures of efficiency increase significantly until they plateau at about 1500 joules. And you know, should note that 100% healing efficiency, right, means that we recovered fully the pristine, you know, property. So we get 100% strength healing efficiency, meaning that we can fully recover the prior strength in these samples. And we show it here a little more, you know, qualitatively, and you can see that, you know, the fraction of samples where the second fracture, so the fracture after healing, happens outside a decision actually increases, meaning that there, at a certain point, you know, you add enough energy or use enough energy in your healing process that the strength of that scission becomes higher than the strength of the rest of the sample, so you force the fracture to happen outside of that scission. So let's look at tensile failure, and this is the second type of damage, and you can see electron microscopy images showing sample after failure with the crack open there and after healing with two levels of energy input. And again, these are stress strain plots at different levels of energy input, and you can see that the strength and the toughness increases significantly as you increase the energy used during healing. And we used, again, healing efficiency to quantify it. And as you increase the energy. You can recover, fully recover the strength at about 3,500 joules. The toughness is a little problematic. I think the toughness healing efficiency increases, but it does not increase as much as the strength healing efficiency. And we think that may be partly due to the fact that the new nickel that we're depositing is of a brittle nature, and so it has a high strength but low toughness. Going to plastic deformation, so here what we did was we loaded the samples until 3% strain, then we healed them, then we loaded them again, and you can see there a comparison between the pink plot, so that's for a sample healed at 1500 joules, and the blue one for a sample that was not healed. And the point of doing this really is just to show that we don't need to wait until complete fracture to heal these samples. We can basically anticipate fracture and, you know, heal these samples so they can be stronger and not fail prematurely, compared to the case where they're not healed at all. So these are electron microscopy images. So you can see after the first loading, you get these cracks in the coating. So these cracks only happen in the coating while the nickel is still intact. So the nickel is not fractured, but the coating has a lower failure strain than the nickel, and so it exposes it, which is really important for our healing, because as you can see in the second image, we get selective nickel deposition only in the areas where the stress is highest. So it's really, you know, thinking about this coating, and this coating really is the crux of this process, because you can use it to control the healing significantly. After the third image shows that after we do that second loading and it fractures, you can see that a lot of the fractures, pretty much all the fractures, happen in areas where nickel was not deposited. So in between those areas where there was nickel deposition, that's where the fracture happens. Fracture never happens in an area that was reinforced with new nickel. And we use this strengthening factor, so it's basically a ratio of non-healed tensile strength to the healed tensile strength, and we can see that, you know, at 1500 joules, we can get above 1.2 strengthening factor, meaning that we can increase our original strength by about 1.2 times on average. And we also show that, you know, an interesting application of this technique can also be applied to electrical system or electronic circuits, for example. And so we just took a sample of nickel foam, then we, you know, cut it in half, then we healed it again, and we measured the electrical resistance in each instance. And you can see that we recover the electrical resistance up to 2.5% of its original value. So this means that this technique is very effective in getting electrical conductivity back to its original value in electrical circuits. And also a main advantage of our technique compared to other metal healing technique is that it can be used at low temperatures. So, you know, we can do it at, you know, 20 degrees C or, you know, room temperature. And it also requires a low level of energy input, especially compared to some of these techniques that you see in red. So the heat-driven precipitation techniques where they use, you know, binary alloys, and they induce precipitation of one phase of the alloy into the cracks, and that requires temperatures close to the melting point of the metal. And these are the techniques that are most common in the metal healing field. And we're also doing, you know, slightly better than the arc welding and e-beam welding techniques, which are very well established fabrication techniques. So to summarize, so we show that electrochemistry enables transport-mediated healing in cellular metals, and we enable effective and low energy room temperature healing of solid metals. We can recover the strength, fully recover the strength after two types of damage, and up to 1.5 times strengthening of samples after plastic deformations. And interesting fact is that, you know, using just a smartphone battery, so a 5,000 milliampere hour smartphone battery, which is very common, we can heal, you know, a cleaved sample 162 times. So it's really, you know, puts in perspective that this technique really requires minute amount of energy. And of course, it can be used to recover electrical conductivity after fractures. And this is, you know, this field of metal healing is really still in its, you know, infancy, and there's still not work yet on autonomous healing or healing, you know, repeatable healing, for example, and enabling, especially autonomous healing, enabling autonomous healing can really revolutionize the use of, or the application of this technique to design aerospace parts or design robots or so on. And it can also particularly change the design process, because right now in engineering, our design process is really based on preventing fracture. But when you have a material where you really don't worry about it fracturing, right? You know that the material will adapt and heal itself, you know, up to a certain physical limit, of course, but you know that your material can handle more stress or can handle more stress than you expect in your initial modeling, then you're not as much worried about preventing fracture, and it gives you a little more freedom as an engineer in your design process and allows you, for example, to lower some of the constraints on your design. So I just want to, you know, if you're interested in reading more about this, you know, we have a paper published, so you can look at it, and I'm happy to answer any questions here or by email or later. Yeah, thank you very much.
So I have a question regarding insulating polymer. How typical is it to deposit and remove it from the metal?
I don't think you can remove it from the metal. It'd be very difficult for you to remove it from the metal, but it is very easy to deposit. It's just a vapor process, so it starts out as a dimer, and then you put it through the, you know, dimer powder, and you put it through the deposition system, and it undergoes a few transformations, and then it just deposits easily on your substrate, whatever substrate you have. And it also, the interesting thing is that it happens at room temperature. So the deposition chamber does not even need to be heated. There's no need for an initiator for it to polymerize or anything like that. So it just happens by itself at room temperature. Yeah.
Okay, so like after the metal is healed, the polymer will stay on there.
Yeah, and you will need the polymer especially to heal later. If you wanna do healing on a continuous basis, you will need the polymer to stay there.
Another question about the electrolytes. So from the picture shown there, the metal is immersed into the electrolytes for healing it. So is there any possibility that you can put part of the metals into the, only the fraction part into the electrolytes?
That is possible, yeah.
Or you can just, can you like drop the electrolytes onto the part that you want to fix, and then you apply the electricity onto that part so that you can just have the deposition of nickel
on the metal? Well, it applies on the property of your, it depends on the property of your electrolyte. If you have a solid electrolyte, that'll probably be easier for you to contain it within that region. But for a liquid electrolyte, it's just gonna go everywhere, so you need some way to contain it.
So, hold on, I just wanna make a point there.
Yeah.
You go to the picture of the deposition process. Yeah. So you can put electrolyte in any part of the metal foam that you want. The important thing to enable healing is that the electrolyte touches, makes physical contact with the part you want to heal and the other electrode that's in the electrolyte here. So you see where it says nickel plate, there's an arrow. So this is another nickel plate, and that's where we get the metal.
Okay.
The electrolyte has to be connected between that external plate, or it could be internal, but it has to be another metal source and wherever you want to be healing.
Okay.
And you can arrange the electrolyte however you want, as long as it's making that contact between those two.
I have two questions. Firstly, why nickel? Is it possible that you restore the resistivity back to the pristine And or will it always increase after heating?
Okay, your first question about the nickel. It's just easy to electrodeposit nickel, and you can do it at room temperature, and the electrolytes are available, and it's also a pretty cheap metal. You can also electrodeposit out of metals. There are some metals that you cannot electrodeposit or need some specific electrolytes to deposit. So it depends, I would say. If you know, if you're trying to select a specific metal for your application, you have to do some research on that metal to see if it is possible to electrodeposit it. The other question about the resistivity. So are you asking about whether, I didn't quite understand what you meant by your question.
You, on your slides, I see that the resistivity increased after steaming. I'm wondering if
yes.
you can restore it back to the...
Well, it increased a little bit. I mean, I said it was 2.5% higher than the original. So that's pretty good. I wouldn't say, you know, it's within the error too.
Do you think if we like flow more electricity through it, then maybe the resistivity will decrease further?
What do you mean? So put a higher voltage on the...
Like if you deposit more nickel through the fracture point, will it like decrease the resistivity any further?
Yeah, you probably would, because you would increase, you know, the cross-sectional area through which your electrons flow, so you would decrease your resistivity. But that's probably, I don't know, probably be, you know, cheating a little bit, but it would depend on how much energy you have, you know, available for you, right? So if you're working with a robot that only has a battery, you know, that has so much capacity, and you're trying to heal a certain wire in a circuit, for example, you know, you have only so much energy you can use, and so you have to sort of judiciously design your system to satisfy, you know, regain the resistivity without, you know, eating too much energy.
Can you speak to why the healing efficiency standard errors are so large?
Oh, okay, so this is, so here, for example,
exactly.
Yeah, so that's standard deviation. So these samples are random, right? It's a random foam, and so when you fracture it, you have no control over the locations of the fracture first. And you also, you know, when we heal it, we don't have a lot of control over how spaced are the members after the fracture. So think of it this way, right? I fracture, this is my member that I fractured, right? And when I put it back in the electrolyte, they may be a little misaligned, they may be a little more spaced out, they may be stuck together, which is probably the ideal case. And so it depends. And, you know, in this case, we don't have a lot of control over that. So that creates a little bit of, you know, randomness in the process, which we try to account for. I think we have those in the paper, and I didn't include them here. We have a little, you know, statistical model that we use to try to account for that variability, and we have these design curves to show you, you know, how, what is your probability of attaining a certain healing efficiency depending on the energy that you use. So it's just, you know, it's just a probability game, I would say. It's not very deterministic. Yeah.
Yeah, so we see the examples of more based on like see the slice shape. What about if we want to make it the metal more in volume,
yeah.
Right? Let's say 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet block. Okay, if we have a fracture right in the middle, where are we gonna attach the metal, right, the new nickel to mount into the center part or the entire?
You don't need to mount it into a certain part as long as you have an electrical contact on the edge of your piece. You know, it's in contact with the metal, and the electrolyte is, you know. I'm talking here about, you know, you're saying not a bulk piece of metal, it's a porous piece of metal, cellular piece of metal, right? So as long as this P is inside the electrolyte and the electrolyte is all the pores, right? Nickel ions are close by, so they will have access to that fracture wherever it is. So really size doesn't matter. And that's also a nice thing about this technology.
Maybe you're following up maybe that's a decision to where we put the new nickels, right, as the filling part, right? I know the ion motion is the closest pattern to go to, or...
Yeah, but the ions are everywhere, right?
No, right. where do you choose to put the nickel pad?
Yeah, so that's the polymer coating, right? Whatever the, because that's the thing about the polymer coating, it coats everything, right? So wherever you fracture, that's where your nickel is exposed to the electrolyte. And so that way, you know your nickel plating will only happens in the areas where there's cracks. And you don't need to worry about it, you know, sort of like select yourself where the nickel heals, because the polymer does that, you know, control work for you.
So I get the idea that you make a foam form of the metal, and therefore it's going to be easier to repair a rupture. Is it more likely to rupture if you don't foam it?
So you mean if it's a foam, it has a lower strength,
yeah,
than, yes.
Well, your autonomous example, if I wanted, I'd like to not have ruptures, so I'd like to put in strong enough conductors that I don't have to worry about that, and I'm just, that's exactly what I'm worried about. What's the trade-off between going to the foamy form, that looks like, you know, your biomimicry, and the actual...
Yeah, I mean, as you said, it's a trade-off. It's not really, you know, straightforward. So it's a trade-off between strength and functionality, right? Yeah, so it's something I guess the designer has to figure out, and it's not really some, it depends on the you know, the situation you're working on. And so you have to work between that trade-off of, do I want higher strength, or am I willing to sacrifice a little bit of strength in the same way that bone does, right? Our bones are not the strongest they can be. They can probably be stronger if they were like solid, you know, all solid material. But bone, you know, sacrifices a little bit of strength to have that functionality, because, you know, there are cells, there are blood vessels that, you know, exerts all these functions that help us to live our lives, right?
Two questions. First, what is the rate?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't mention that. So it requires a few hours of healing for these samples. So for the scission failure, it takes a minimum 4 hours. For the one before the tensile failure, about 10 hours, I would say. Yeah.
And then what are the big cost drivers here? How expensive is your polymer coating, your production process? Can you talk a little bit about the expense around it?
The expense.
We don't worry
that much as researchers about expense. You know, he probably worries about it a lot. I don't. I just put in orders. Yeah, but the electrolyte is really not that expensive, especially if you're working with nickel. If you want to move to other metals, then I would think, you know, the expense of your electrolyte will increase. Oops. Okay, the expense of the electrolyte will increase, and honestly depends on your system. I think the expense will depend on the system that you're building around this metal, you know, instead of the metal itself. Yeah.
And then one last question. You talk about it being able to heal at room temperature, but for aerospace application, have you looked at the kind of parameters in terms of how low and how high it can heal?
It will depend, a lot of it will depend on your electrolyte and will depend on the coating. So we're using a polymer coating, and there is a limit. If you go to really low temperatures, you could probably compromise the coating and make it really brittle. Or the electrolyte will probably freeze, you know, since it's a liquid, but there's probably some electrolytes that can withstand really low temperatures. But, you know, there's always a limit.
So, have you ever tried this technique to alloy?
Using alloys?
Yeah, or steel or something else. Have you tried it to top cooker and measure the electricity?
We have not yet done any, like, you know, really rigorous investigation of, you know, like healing other, you know, alloys or metals. But we've done, you know, electrodeposition of nickel on, you know, steel and aluminum and copper, and it seems to work fine with no problems with the adhesion of the nickel on those metals and alloys.
So you're saying steel, it would work on steel?
I think so, yeah.
Then what's the byproduct as far as the
electrolyte, what's, is there a toxic byproduct in disposable?
Oh, so you mean the toxicity of the electrolyte itself?
Yeah, once you're done, is there something you have to dispose of afterwards?
Yeah, the electrolyte itself is not very, you know, it's pretty toxic. And I think there are also the toxicity of certain crystals in that, you know, that can be generated from the electrolyte. They can be carcinogenous, you know, like they can.
It is. You're saying it is.
Yeah, I would say that so the electrolyte is toxic. Like, you don't want to pour it into the river, it'll kill the fish. But you can reuse the electrolyte, so you don't have to throw it out every time. So they do this in industry regularly. And you just, what you're reusing is the nickel. And so you put new nickel in, and that's not toxic. And there's no net waste. But you have to, if you want it to be safe, you have to contain the electrolyte and reuse the electrolyte, maintain the quality of the electrolyte. But that's regularly done in industry.